Hello and welcome to Art Speak Radio. This is Maria Vasquez Boyd with you every Wednesday from noon to 1 on 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. You should have just been a part of this conversation as the music's playing. We're talking about serial killers. What is it? We'll have to do a whole show about that, Mark. So, I want to say welcome to everyone listening online at kkfi.org. Thank you for tuning in. And, today's program, we have artist Joseph Broghammer, Dan Free, Carmen Moreno, and actually we have the curator and gallery owner, Philip Eirik, here. And so we're going to get the show started because we want to talk to our guest, Joseph Broghammer, who's from Omaha, and he's recently showing a collection of his really beautiful work at Cerbera Gallery at 2011 Baltimore, and it's been extended through November 17th. So welcome, Joseph, and Philip.
Thank you, Maria.
Yeah. Hey, thank you for turning me on to Joseph's work because it's really quite sensational.
Well, it's wonderful to have Joseph here in Kansas City. He had shown previously once before. That was many years ago.
Yeah.
So we're especially excited to have him here back in town after almost 2 decades.
Wow.
Yeah, so we have a mutual friend in Omaha, and she introduced me to Joe's work. And Joe... exhibits all over the world. He has been exhibiting in Europe, primarily in Germany and in southern France. And it's really exciting to have him here in Kansas City.
Well, I want to, again, thank you for introducing us via email and all that, because you really bring some wonderful, talented artists to your gallery, Cerbera Gallery. And so I love having the opportunity to meet with them and have them share their story and their work, you know, on air. So thank you, Joe, for coming, and we'll be back. No, I'm just kidding. We've gotten to be pretty good friends. But I want to say, Joe, is an Omaha-based artist, and he's as much of a storyteller as he is an artist. Through his one-of-a-kind pastel drawings and animals, Broghammer memorializes monumental moments in his life, good or bad, using different animals as a vehicle to express these lived experiences. So let's talk about your body of work, Animals, that's currently on view. It's really loaded. I can tell you that. What are some of the animals, some of the drawings that you have in the gallery? I used the owl for this event page, but there are a variety of animals.
Yeah, there's buffalo, there's sheep, goats, owls.
We have a calf, and we have a pony.
Oh, yeah.
And did I see a goat in there, too?
There's a goat.
Yeah. So you have a lot of different birds and livestock, and they're staring back at the viewer. And then you've got all these different iconographic symbols. Let's talk about some of the symbols and sort of the storytelling aspect of your work.
Well, my work is derived from, as you had said, my life. And in a sense, it's like a visual diary of my life. So good, bad, whatever, it all kind of goes in there. So if you took a page from a diary that would start off, you know, I got up and I put on jeans today and then I had breakfast and you described the breakfast. And so in a sense, that's what the works are. It's just kind of a what happens in my life from the start of the work to the finish of the work. With the birds, mostly with the birds, it's really not about the bird. The bird is really just a stage to tell the story on. I chose birds because they're kind of blank. They look the same alive as they do dead. You don't really see the muscle structure or the personality like you would in a farm animal. And then the farm animals were mostly as a palate cleanser from time to time. And I really just want to have a conversation with the animal. So it's just me and that animal talking to each other, in a sense. So those aren't as embellished as the birds would be.
I love that in your statement that you mentioned that each piece is a visual diary, a story of your life and what happens around you. And even something as simple as your favorite cereal, Lucky Charms, sometimes finds some of those icons in
yep.
in your work.
Yeah,
right?
I did a whole work about baked chicken, mashed potatoes and gravy, and green bean casserole, because that's my favorite food.
Yeah.
I've done revenge art. So if somebody does something bad to me, I'll do a piece of art about them.
Mm-hmm. But it's only you know.
Yeah, I don't tell them it's about them. Though a lot of times they see it and they like the work.
Uh-huh.
It's really not about them. It's really about me. And if it's revenge art, then it's really me working through my problems so I can get over the fact that I'm mad at somebody because it's kind of petty. So they don't really know, and it's not really that important that they know about it.
Sure, sure. Now, let's talk about sort of the technique that you use, because in here you talk about your work as dry paintings. And tell us what sort of materials you work with.
Well, you know, for a long time, as a drawer, I thought I was a drawer. And then I had a curator to a museum come to my house, and he was looking to choose works for a drawing show, and he said, okay, you know, thank you, I'm sorry, there's nothing here. And I thought, come on, I'm a drawer, how is there nothing here? And he goes, well, these aren't drawings, these are paintings. And I said, they're chalk, pastel on paper, that's drawing. He said, actually, pastel is considered a painting medium, not a drawing medium. Drawing is black and white. I suppose he's old school, but drawing is black and white, mm-hmm. painting is color. And so he called them dry paintings. So that was the first time a number of years ago. Yeah, it was the first time it kind of clicked into my head that that's what I was doing.
Well, I like that your work is very much about the human experience. That it's been said that they are honest and full of life, evoking a sincere exchange between artist and viewer. And, you know, when I saw the work, it's fairly large on arches, mostly arches paper, right?
Right.
And drawing and ink and pastel.
It's pastel, pencil, there is surveyor chalk, there is sidewalk chalk, there is, in some cases, the powder that you would put into that machine where when you pull the string and snap the string, I use that stuff into the work. Just anything I can, drawing, even though it's considered painting, any drawing material I can use, I put into it.
And do you also work in collage in some cases?
Nope.
Okay.
Well, collage and imagery, but not collage and material.
Okay. So, you know, I want to mention, as I said, Joe's work is at the Cerbera Gallery, 2011 Baltimore in the Crossroads, and that's up through November 17th. So I also want to mention that he's also a published illustrator and successful children's book, Chica, written by Karen Duncan. How did that come about?
I got invited down to a residency in Mexico
by
the Duncans in Puerto Vallarta. And given a whole house for a month to do whatever I wanted. They really didn't care. They liked the idea of inviting artists and giving them a place to work. But if you just wanted to go to the beach and play at the beach all the time you were there, you could do that. They didn't care. I decided I wanted to work, and so I spent the whole time working there, and I was grateful that they allowed me to do this, that I thought I would do a drawing for Karen to thank her. And her most beloved possession was her dog. I shouldn't say possession. Her most beloved friend was her dog. And I kind of bonded with the dog a little bit, since when I was there, they had a lot of executives from their company down there, and they were more focused on talking to the Duncans than they were to anybody else. So it was me playing with the dog most of the time. So I did a drawing of the dog, and I sent it to Karen anonymously because I didn't want anything for it. I just really wanted to thank her for having me. She loved it, and she framed it and put it in her bathroom, which I think is funny. And so it was a while later that when she decided that she wanted to do this book about her dog, about how her and her dog met, she said I was the only person she could think of that really captured not the realism of the dog, but the soul of the dog. So that's why she chose me.
Very nice. You know, when you were in Mexico, as coming from Omaha, okay, so there's a different culture, Omaha and Mexico.
Right.
Was there a shift in the way that you work or materials that used?
Material-wise, yes. Uh-huh. I mean, I'd always used drawings of milagros, which are the little icons, Mexican icons, that silver or gold, but you would see them nailed to, like, crosses and such,
right,
or hearts.
Right.
And, of course, once I was down there, I got to see them live and such. So I spent every afternoon. I'd work in the morning, take the afternoon off, and then work in the evening. In the afternoons, I would go into the city or in the old town part of it and just look for as many of things I could find milagro-wise. Mm-hmm. I got some molds, which I thought were great, some old-time molds.
Oh, wow.
Of them.
Wow.
Yeah, those are pretty cool.
Yeah.
So that, for me, that was very interesting to be able to see and experience that.
Mm-hmm.
From them. But since my work is all based off of my life, it doesn't matter where you put me because it's about my life.
Right.
So
right.
I may get a little bit of inspiration from the surroundings of me at the time. Most of it is not affected by that.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I love milagros. You know,
oh, yeah, they're great.
And there's so many, of course, that you see in Mexico and just really just plastered all over statues and, you know, certain iconic, you know, saints and that sort of thing.
Right.
And, you know, being Mexican myself, I do kind of believe in that sort of stuff. It's magical.
Sure.
It's like your
Who
work.
Doesn't have a good luck charm?
Yeah.
We all do.
Yeah, I believe
And somewhere or another.
Yeah. You know, and I want to mention that Joe is also an educator, assistant, artist assistant. Yes, you're still an artist assistant.
Yeah, I work with an artist, and bleep this out, but an older artist in Omaha, and I work as her assistant, helping her out.
But you've also were at the Bemis Art Center as a resident artist, right?
Right. Resident educator.
Okay.
Yeah. So I was working with younger artists with the Bemis, teaching them, obviously, all forms of art. Kids that were not exposed to art when they were younger, kind of a thing.
Yeah. You know, as I mentioned, your work is oil pastel, and it's very hands-on and all that. Is there any interest in learning, or perhaps you already do some technical sort of graphic stuff? Does that any of that appeal to you? You know, with graphic design or any of that? Other than maybe cataloging your work.
What do you mean, doing like album covers and...
Well, no, I mean just, you know, how some people can sit at an, at their computers and they just begin to work with art on, you know, InDesign, Adobe, and that sort of thing. I mean, is that something that you're
interested in? No, not so much.
Yeah.
Weirdly enough, I have a degree in painting, though I never really did oil painting at all. I have a degree in it, but I never actually did oil painting when I was in college.
Mm-hmm.
I picked it up years later. For me, I was more interested in what was inside my head than to learn how to draw a cat or a dog or a foot or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
I had to learn a lot of that stuff years down the line.
Yeah.
I wanted to know what was going to make me unique from everybody else because I figured that's the hard part. I can teach anybody how to draw a cat.
Oh, sure,
that's not that hard. But to teach somebody to put emotions into the cat or emotions or tell a story in a sense, that's hard. Because most people go blank and go, oh my God, cat, now what?
Yeah,
so that, I figured, was more important. Luckily, I had great teachers that let me just do whatever I wanted and let me pursue that.
We're grateful for that.
Yeah, other than I had to learn how to do oil painting years later. But, yeah.
What do you want people to know about your work? What do you want people to sense or feel or experience about your work?
Okay. I don't know if I,
kind
don't
of
know if I can
you
answer that.
Off. Well, you know, I know that we talked earlier in the green room, and it's sort of like you and I talked about, you know, how we both view your work. It's almost like, you know, when you look up in the sky and you see a cloud, well, you see maybe an elephant or something, but that wasn't really the artist's intent. But it's okay
right.
to to sort of have your own experience with art. I mean, do you feel that?
For all art, I think you should go and just enjoy it however you enjoy it. So if you see something that's negative, but you have a positive intake from it, fine.
Yeah.
I'm not one that's desperately wants to have you. I don't want to indoctrinate you. Mostly because, one, you're not going to know if I'm mad at somebody and I'm doing a hateful piece about them. I don't think you, one, should know, because you don't know who this person is.
Sure.
And I don't, it just makes it look bad on me if I tell you it's a hateful piece. So I don't want you to necessarily know every single thing I do, though I'll tell you if you ask.
Sure.
I want you to just get your own experience from the work.
I love that. Brog Hammer's Animals translates as a flowing stream of consciousness. The different birds and livestock staring back at the viewer are ornamented with iconographic symbols, small surprises along the way. I love that. And Philip, do you have anything to add to Joe's work?
Well, as Joe just mentioned, I think it's wonderful to see visitors at the gallery really experience the art firsthand. Mm-hmm. And obviously we do a lot of digital marketing, and usually we get a lot of response on social media when we post images. But this time around, especially because of the size, for example, of the owls, they're 42 by 43, so they're quite monumental pieces. It is really interesting to see the reaction of folks that come to the gallery, and they're really astounded because there's so many icons, there's so many symbols in there, and there's so many details. I'm not even joking when I say dozens. Sometimes there are even hundreds in one painting. Mm-hmm. And it is wonderful because every time you look at these works of art, you discover something new that you haven't seen before.
You think you've seen it all.
You might, you might make a new connection between, you know, two symbols. So it is really a wonderful storytelling tool, and you can tell your own story. And I think, you know, that, goes back to what Joe mentioned. It's not necessarily what he intended or why he created the art, but it's what you see in it and how you experience it. So they're really pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah. So, Joe, where do you go from here? Back home, Omaha?
No, I'm going to Bella Napoli to buy Italian groceries. And then, maybe Arthur Bryant, and then home.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Omaha's not that far, but...
you didn't have to drive it this morning,
Three hours
of total boredom.
Well, I don't know what to say to that. Do stop by the Glore Museum in St. Joe, the psychiatric museum. That's kind of cool. Yeah, and then, of course, the Albert.
The gift shop alone would be just the best.
We need to hang more often, Joe. You're wonderful. And congratulations on this wonderful work. Animals at Cerbera Gallery at 2011 Baltimore through November 17th. Want to mention websites, social media, anything that listeners can find your work on?
We have a Facebook page. You can find us at Art Cerbera. That's our Facebook handle, and the website is Cerbera Gallery, all one word, .com, CerberaGallery.com.
And you're open Tuesday through Saturday or by appointment, right?
That is correct. I mean, we live close by, if someone wants to give me a call, I certainly can open the door anytime.
I get my haircut next door.
And it's Tuesday through Saturday. Yes.
Yeah, very good. Your website?
My website is josephbrokhammer.com. And on Facebook, it's just Joseph Brokhammer. That's B as in boy, R-O-G-H-A-M-M-E-R.
Yeah. Well, I want to thank you so very much for coming in today, Joe. Stay safe on the road.
Bella Napoli next. So I'm excited.
I will come and visit you. You know, I've been meaning to get up there to Omaha for a lot of different reasons. And, you know, they actually have a Mexican museum up there, too.
So yes, a beautiful one.
I want to get up there.
Well, you let me know. I'll take you.
Let's go. Road trip, guys. Thank you so much, Philip. Thank you, Joe.
Thanks for having us.
You bet. And we're going to be right back with Art Speak Radio after this.
Support for KKFI provided by AEG Presents, presenting astrophysicist Neil deGrasse Tyson in support of his book, Letters from an Astrophysicist, at the Arvest Bank Theater at the Midland, Wednesday, October 16th at 7:30 p.m. The book is included on most tickets. Tickets and more information at arvestbanktheater.com.
KKFI is hosting a community ascertainment forum on Thursday, October 24th at the station, 39th and Main, Kansas City, Missouri, second floor. Community leaders will make short presentations about the activities of their organizations. Doors open at 5:15 and the program starts at 6 p.m. Please join us on October 24th for the community ascertainment forum. Hey, and this is Art Speak Radio, and I'm Maria Vasquez Boy. Thank you so much for joining us today. We're having a lot of fun in the studio with Joe and Carmen and Dan. Try the other headphones, kiddo. And, of course, Philip. So thank you so much for tuning in. My next guest, Carmen Moreno, she is an artist and community activist. We're going to talk about her new project, Earth Body, and she's going to give us an overview of the work. That's okay. You know, what we will find with this program. Carmen's statement, she says, I believe that it is imperative to address race and equity in the fields of arts and sciences, including ecological theory, conservation, green infrastructure, urban design, agriculture, health and wellness, and land restorations. So we're going to talk to Carmen. Thank you so much for coming in today.
Yeah, for sure.
Now, so are those headphones not working?
No.
Well, but they look great on you. You know, sometimes the volume might be turned down, too, so you might check that. But we're happy to have you in the studio. It's been a little bit since you were here last. We're going to talk about the new project, Earth Body, and that came out of some other work that you did in residence, right?
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. So tell us about it.
So I was visiting Mexico for an artist residency.
I'm going to have you move to that mic because I'm getting a little bit of buzz on this one. So yeah, that's better. Yeah.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, we can hear you.
Okay, cool.
Good.
So I was visiting Mexico work on an artist residency and also to visit my family and kind of document stories of migration and think about the kind of dissonance that happens from generation to generation. And my family, they are farmers, so I visited the family farm. They also live on a unique geological location in which they have access to water, which is pretty rare in Mexico.
Yeah.
And there's a large waterfall on the land. So sometimes I think as being a daughter of a first-generation immigrant, we get all sorts of kind of dissonance in our identity and who we are and kind of tracking down those stories through different avenues rather than just person to person. So my father was an immigrant farm worker, and I've always been inspired by nature. And when I would visit the farm, I would go out on the land and look at, you know, the ethnobotanical inhabitants, the plants, the ecological life, the geological life, and look to those things to kind of inform me about transformations over a long period of time that weren't just in one human lifespan, but multiple.
Wow. How long were you there on during the residency? Because I know when we spoke to you last, I think you were planning to head to Mexico in a few months after that interview, and then you were there how long?
I was there for about 2 months.
Wow. Yeah.
And I traveled up and down the transvolcanic belt. So I'm really interested in kind of narratives that relate the earth to the human body. And I was looking at this waterfall and thinking about female forms and iconic vision, visual imagery in the Mexican culture and studying land formation, the Guadalupe, and just different narratives that relate kind of the fire of the earth to the heart. So that's something that we often see in Mexican religious imagery is, you know, the heart and the fire. And yeah. I was thinking about, you know, like when life can become difficult, and we go through these like long spans or journeys to figure out who we are. It's kind of like breaking it open to see what makes life tick inside. So what does that look like in the human body, and what does that look like for the earth if we compare the earth to our body?
I like that. Now, if you just tuned in to ArtSpeak Radio, I'm talking with Carmen Moreno, artist and community activist, and we're talking about the project, the new project Earth Body, and that's what you're calling the entire project is Earth Body?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, you mentioned Guadalupe, and that is such a culture of you know, her presence in Mexico.
Yeah.
You know.
And so she has a really complex presence, as a lot of Latino culture is very complex, I think, beyond what we kind of narrated in the United States. And the thing that interested me in the Guadalupe is she is the iconic symbol of Mexico.
Yeah.
So you don't think, I mean, we see images like the Mexican flag, we see all sorts of different things that represent our culture throughout time, but she's a constant. She's always there. And the fact that the woman is kind of, this ideology is really, really interesting to
right.
me.
Right, and then, you know, it's interesting because it's also sort of, I don't know, sort of she was brought into the culture and sort of replacing the female aspect of, I forget her name, Tonola?
Possibly,
yeah.
I'm not sure.
Where you know, people, where the Catholic religion wanted less of a sort of deity, but maybe a saint for people to pray to and to honor, and so she was brought in as...
Yeah. And in some ways, probably the only path to colonization, because the indigenous history was so matriarchal, there would be no acceptance of Catholicism without a woman being kind of a pinnacle in those narratives.
So with your research and the traveling and everything what you did, is it still ongoing, your project, your cultural research, is it still ongoing, or is there sort of a goal, something at the end that you want to bring, whether it's visually or written, or...
So I think it will be ongoing almost like my whole life.
It's very complex, as you mentioned, yeah.
Yeah. So the research is like, you know, a lot about identity and how we understand ourselves relative to geologic location, to culture, mm-hmm. To contemporary movements through time. And so that part will probably always be a process. What happened from the residency is that it inspired something in me to kind of try to reach out to other people and understand other cultural relationships to science, to plants, mm-hmm. and try to reframe how we think about sciences. You know, we have one idea of what a scientist or an artist is in
sure.
Western society, but what does it look like to be a scientist from a different cultural
mm-hmm.
perspective?
Mm-hmm.
And those topics always interested me, and I wanted to think about how my family was practicing agriculture and science and the ways that it had transformed from multiple generations, including their migration to the United States. So that's when I kind of came up with the idea of the Earth Body, which is to invite POC communities
mm-hmm.
Into a space where we could host interpretive education and have conversations about what it means to be a scientist and have a relationship to the natural world in our own culture.
Now, I understand the program overview goes from October 9th through December 31st of this year, right?
Yeah, that's correct.
Yeah. So what can you tell us about those meetups or that?
So we have an awesome schedule. I'm so excited to work with all of the artists that are part of Earth Body. So if you want to kind of explore these ideas and find out more information, we have a page on Facebook where you can check out the Earth Body Project. And we have all of our classes posting there over the next 2 weeks.
Wow. So what do the classes consist of? Are they going to be sequential? Are they just a one shot or 1 hour kind of?
They're about an hour and a half.
Okay.
And it's on a range of topics in arts and ecology. So, for example, one of our artists, Kiki Sirena, she's doing paper mache plants and agave plants, traditional Mexican paper mache. So it's kind of an art class where you're identifying with the plant and you're creating through visual imagery. And then we have other classes, like things that are hosted by Harvest Moon or Earthseed, that are going to go a little bit deeper into wild crafting and the history of wild crafting and their scientific properties.
Now, for these classes, is it important for folks to schedule or make an appointment or let you know ahead of time that to reserve a space for them?
Yes. Yeah.
Pretty limited?
Pretty limited. So if you're interested and you want more information, you definitely have to go to that Earth Body Project page on Facebook. Check out the events, see what you're into, and reserve a spot.
And where will these take place again?
They will be all throughout the city at different host sites.
Uh-huh.
So each workshop is at a different location, kind of featuring a different community or a different POC business.
And Carmen, as we mentioned, this is such a complex subject and research. Do you find yourself heading back to Mexico anytime soon to develop more of this program? Because it seems like it's something of importance to you and for others.
I hope so.
Yeah.
My major kind of end game is thinking about how we archive other cultures' scientific work. In the United States, there is not a lot of POC archive or documentation. And I kind of want to make the journey back and forth from Mexico to think about how we're archiving our natural history and how we're documenting and preserving those spaces.
And again, for our listeners, POC, people of color, I know sometimes we forget about the acronyms, but, you know, it's really important. Blood of the Earth Project, it was a cultural research study that explored complex relationships in blood narratives, geological sites, religious visual imagery. Carmen Moreno, again, Facebook Earth Body Project is the page that you can find more information. What is the first class that's going to take place?
Our first class will be hosted by Kristen Ortega, and she'll be walking us through pen and ink drawings, ethnobotanical journaling of natural plants, native indigenous land regions, and insects.
So what do attendees need to bring?
All materials are provided by the project.
Wow.
So you just bring yourself. This is all about public service and an offering. So these are all free. They're open to anyone. And you just take your artwork home.
I like that. And this is going to go on through the end of December. And then 2020 will bring something completely different, right? Or new. I don't know which.
But yes.
Putting words in your mouth now, Carmen.
No, it is possible. So this project is funded through the Land Institute, and it's possible that we find more funding to continue it through the year. So we're just going to hold tight, get through our programming, and see where it goes.
You know, and just one more thing that I do want to ask you: is there any sort of documentation, any photographs, something that people can view as part of your research project when you were in Mexico or?
Yeah, I have more information and my visual works on my website at ccmoreno.com/earthbody.
Very good. Final words?
I think final words are, if you're interested and these things really speak to you, look for more information. This is a platform for community. This is a platform for people that have these interests. And we're just looking to engage the public and have a conversation.
Beautiful. Thank you so much, Carmen.
Thank you.
And we'll see you back next time, okay?
Sounds good.
And for the rest of you, just hang on. We're going to play a few announcements and underwriting and that sort of thing, and then we'll be back with ArtSpeak Radio.
Hi, I'm Russ Simmons.
And I'm Susan Sanders.
And this is Take Two, two takes at a movie currently playing in the Kansas City area. And today the topic is a biopic about the late entertainer Judy Garland, and it's called Judy.
Starring Renee Zellweger, and I'll say she gives a startling performance of the restless spirit of Judy Garland.
Yes, it takes place in the last few troubled months of her life when, after years of loveless marriages and drugs and insomnia, she ultimately tries a comeback on the London stage, and it's the difficulties that are framed around that setup.
It's really very moving, and I think Renee Zellweger knocks it out of the park. I mean, she's displaying Judy Garland as sick to death of life, and yet it's very moving. It's not an imitation, but it captures her spirit.
Yeah, I think she does capture the offstage Judy brilliantly.
Yes.
The fragility of her and her life and her insecurities. What it doesn't quite capture is the magnetism of Judy Garland, the performer, the entertainer. That was somewhat missing, I felt, in this performance. But otherwise, I thought she was very good.
I don't know if anyone could capture Judy because she was so unique. But for those who have never seen Judy Garland or don't know who she was, I would recommend, before seeing the film, go see iTunes performances or movie clips, however you can get familiarized with Judy before seeing this film.
Ultimately, this movie is very standard in so many respects, in terms of its script, in terms of its execution. It's pedestrian. However, it's Zellweger that makes it work.
And it's not sentimental. I thought it was very touching.
I'm Russ Simmons.
And I'm Susan Sanders.
And this is Take Two.
Support for KKFI provided by the Kauffman Center for the Performing Arts, presenting Bela Fleck on banjo, Zakir Hussein on tabla, Edgar Meyer on double bass, and Rakesh Charesia on flute. Wednesday, October the 9th at 7 p.m. in Helzberg Hall. These artists collaborate to move with ease between classical, bluegrass, and world music. Bela Fleck, Zakir Hussein, Edgar Meyer, and Rakesh Charesia, October 9th in Helzberg Hall. Learn more at kauffmancenter.org.
This week on the Heartland Labor Forum, we'll ask what Trump is up to with his apprenticeship proposal. We'll find out from a union leader who knows what a real apprenticeship looks like. Then, we ask if the U.S. Constitution can stand up to a presidency that's out of control and unaccountable to Congress or the courts. Join us when we talk to longtime activist legal scholar Bert Newborn with a new book called When at Times the Mob is Swayed, A Citizen's Guide to Defending Our Republic. Tune in Thursday at 6 p.m., rebroadcast Friday, 5 a.m.
Support for KKFI is brought to you by people who live around here and some that don't. Thank you very much for 30 years of community.
Oh, that Bill Sundahl. Don't we just love him? We're going to get our fill of him next week because our pledge drive starts. And so that'll be good. We'll get all the good stuff from Bill Sundahl. Right now, we're going to get all the good stuff from Dan Free, the incorrigible Dan Free, the curator and gallery owner of Trap Gallery in Columbus Park. And it features local, regional, and national artists with shows on third Fridays. Their season runs from April through November. And he's got some stuff to talk about. Hi, friend.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. It's always great to have you in studio, Dan. What you got?
This coming third Friday is going to be a big one. Not only on a selfish note, the Trap Gallery is hosting the 9th ever Love Rust show.
Wow.
It is a group show devoted to Rust. I believe I have 19 artists this year. There's always a few that sneak in at the last second,
mm-hmm.
too.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody works in Rust as medium or muse. There's sculpture, there's painting, there's photography, there's taxidermy, there's assemblage, there's a little bit of everything. So
yeah, I do recall seeing taxidermy last year.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was, yeah. That's surprising. But, you know, it's a huge show, and people really come out in droves for this. There's something about Rust that people love. What's up with the Rust?
I don't know. I've been hooked on it for 30 years now, so I don't know what it is. Yeah. It's beautiful, and there's a wide variety of colors and textures and things that, you know, it takes a lot of forms.
Well, and I think it inspires a lot of folks, just, you know, the patina of Rust, because it's not just one certain color, you know.
Right. So. And I like the dichotomy between, you know, the people that, you know, sometimes rust is a bad thing, you know. If it's on the wheel well of your car,
yeah,
it's bad.
Yeah.
But if it's hanging on the wall, it's beautiful.
So it's sort of a celebration of rust, hence Love Rust, right?
Right. It's a celebration of oxidation. That's what I call it.
I like that. I need to see that on a T-shirt. So that's going to run Friday, October 18th from 6 to 10 p.m. at 525 Gillis Street. How long have you been there?
We bought that building in 2001. Started doing gallery shows almost immediately, just because we had the space.
Yeah.
And tried First Fridays for the first couple of years, but couldn't compete with fire jugglers in the street. So I switched to Third Fridays in 2003. So I've been going for a little while.
Well, you know, and I think that makes sense, because then you have something kind of going on art-wise, you know, through the month. But in Columbus Park, there were a number of art galleries that were open. I think they've kind of disappeared.
We've ebbed and flowed over the years.
Yeah.
I believe we hit our peak in 2008. Where I think there was one month we had 8 venues open. Mm-hmm. You know, people were showing in their living room, and it was really fun. And then I think over that winter, I think we lost about 4, and then it whittled down. And for a couple years, it was just me.
Mm-hmm.
And then the For Sale Gallery moved in on 5th Street. That was sort of a artist-run space. And then the Kiosk Gallery moved into that space. And then the 815 Gallery moved in, 3 years ago, I think.
Mm-hmm.
This coming Third Friday, there'll be 3 venues,
okay.
Plus some people tend to pop up on some front porches.
See, and I think that's fun, because, you know, it's really communal, and it's neighborhood, and you're going to see some good art. Kiosk, didn't they move to the Livestock Exchange building?
They did,
okay.
Which brings me to my next point.
Yay.
Of all the other things that are going on that Third Friday. Livestock Exchange and Hobbs Building down in the West Bottoms, they have tons of artist studio spaces and stuff like that, and they used to do their open studios. They do it April and October, and mm-hmm. they used to do it on the second weekend in October, but this year they got together and decided to move it to the third weekend in October.
Okay.
So rather than try to fight them, we're just going to try to share audiences. So there's 3 spaces open in Columbus Park, and 7 spaces in West Bottoms that are going to be open.
Okay.
Hobbs Building is going to have a couple dozen artist studios open. Blue Gin Gallery, which is at 1400 Union, that's right behind the Hobbs.
Right across the railroad tracks. And the Hobbs is 1427 West 9th?
Let me put my glasses
on. Because I used to have a studio down there.
Yeah, 1427 West 9th.
Okay. Yeah.
And then there's some other artist studio spaces at 1522 St. Louis. So those three spaces are all within spitting distance. Within. And then Livestock Exchange.
And they're at 1600 Genesee.
1600 Genesee.
Kind of space
and there's 30 artist studios that are going to be open.
Mm-hmm.
And Kiosk is in the lobby of that building, as well as the Vanessa Lacey Gallery, who is going to, she's having a show called Fun Sized Art, and she has 50 artists with all salon style. Everything's, I think, 14 inches or smaller. And then
you pack in your car.
Exactly. You just tuck it under your arm and walk out. I mean, after paying for it, you know. And then Plug Projects. I'm not sure exactly what they got going on, but they're going to be open that weekend. And the studios, the open studios are going to be Friday night and Saturday afternoon.
At Livestock?
Livestock and Hops.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Wow. A lot going on this weekend. If you just tuned in, I'm talking to Dan Free of the Trap Gallery in Columbus Park, and they feature local, regional, and national artists with shows on third Fridays. But we're also talking about other venues, other galleries on this third Friday.
Mm-hmm.
Third Friday? Yeah, that are open. The Hobbs Building, the Livestock Exchange, Plug Projects, Kiosk Gallery. Yeah.
And this is on the 18th, so this is
a
week from this Friday.
All right, you're right. I'm off a week, yeah. You know, we're going to be right back with Dan Free after this. We're going to just take a real quick break, and we'll be back.
I'm so full of ideas.
Trap Gallery. You're listening to Art Speak Radio on 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. Hello, Dan.
Hi.
Always happy to have you in the studio. So we're talking about Trap Gallery in Columbus Park, as well as some other galleries around town. But Columbus Park is featuring Love Rust.
Yes. Yes, indeed. Yeah. Ninth year doing Love Rust show. I get new people every year. Sometimes some people drop out, which gives me an opportunity to go find more Rustafarians.
Well, it is pretty popular. It really is. So how do you find your people, or do they find you?
But a little bit of both. Most people find me, but I'm always, you know, searching for new blood out there. I've discovered some Facebook groups that are all about the Rust, and so that shows up on my feed a lot. A lot of it is referrals, because I started out with just a handful of artists in this show, and they and they, you know, would say, oh, you gotta check out this person, and you gotta check out that person. So,
but it's really grown through the years, and I know there is a handful of folks that you'll find almost every year. Oh, and her name is
Ann Reckling.
Yes, thank you. And George Roussis, who's
blacksmith.
Yeah.
Metalsmith.
Who are some more?
John Merrick. He's been in every single one. Mary Fassoni is a sculptor. She lives right in my neighborhood, so she was easy to find. Wes Casey. He's been there. I think he got in on the second one because he was a referral from Mary Fassoni because they used to weld together at the Art Institute. Charles Ray, Lawrence-based artist. He does rust transfers on paper. His stuff is amazing. And before I got going on this show, he had a show across the street when they had the little Art in Columbus Park gallery. And I saw his stuff, and when we decided to do this theme, I tracked him down because I knew he was going to have to be a part of it.
Well, of course, you're very modest, but your photographs aren't too shabby either for us. So they're very nice.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm in the show, too. Dan Wayne, he's been around almost the beginning. He's the taxidermist. Not sure what he's got cooking this year, but it's always whimsical, I would say.
So now this will close out your season for 2019, right?
Yes. I used to do November shows, but it was getting a little too close to Thanksgiving and my wife's birthday, and so we decided to go out with the bang.
And I think, you know, there's a lot of competition with the holidays and families and all that, so it probably does make sense. So for 2020, who are you going to start out with?
I always start out. I hold April show open for an Art Institute senior.
Okay.
Because I remember how hard it was to find a space to have your thesis show. So I kind of wait to see who tracks me down on that. May is always Columbus Park group show. I do a show called Proximity, and it's all artists from the neighborhood. That's always fun. I think I had 25, 30 artists last year. Huh. And then October's always rust, and so the other few months I get a play with, and I'm not prepared to announce my lineup yet.
Well, thank you for coming to the show. We say goodbye to Dan. I want to say that, the gallery is great. I love that it's still going strong in Columbus Park. And, you know, thank you for featuring local and national artists because it's important to give them those venues.
Right.
So thank you for that. So any last words you might want to...
There's more information about the Columbus Park scene. It's columbusparkart.com.
If folks are interested in having a show, are you already booked for 2020, or shall they start looking at 21?
I am not completely booked for 2020. Okay. So I usually start thinking about it once I get through this show because I take the winters off, so that gives me some time to put the year together and stuff like that. There's Trap Gallery has a Facebook page. I think it's Trap Gallery KC.
Okay.
There's a nascent Third Friday KC Facebook page that I plan on updating when I get out of here because I was looking at it and it's kind of bare.
1929.
I don't know. We're trying to just get a little more jazz on Third Fridays.
Well, and I think won't the information be posted in Columbus Park?
ClumbusParkArt.com.
Okay, there you go.
Yes.
I knew there was a website.
Yes, and there should be a map on that website too, so that you can see the addresses of all the places that are going to be open on the 18th and 19th, and a map on how to get between there and here.
Yeah. Terrific. Hey, thank you so much, Dan.
Well,
we love
you.
Having you on. Don't hesitate to contact us, and we'll get you back.
Thank you very much.
You bet. Hey, and that rounds out our program for today. Many thanks to Joe Broghammer, Dan Free, Carmen Moreno, and our wonderful Philip from Cerbera Gallery. Next week, we're going to feature The World Is Your Symbol. What is that, you ask? Well, it's we're featuring untold stories backstage from various artists. So I think that's going to be really kind of exciting. Well, it is for me. I hope it is for you, because I always like to kind of want to know what the backstory, what are some of the experiences these musicians have had, either on stage, off stage, and, you know, on tour, or just with an audience member. You know, what is a kind of an interesting spin from their perspective off or on stage? So those stories, we're going to hear from Maria Cuevas, from Maria the Mexican, Kian Byrne, and Steve Tulipana. That's going to be Wednesday, October 16th. Also, I should mention that we're doing our fall pledge drive, so we hope that you will support this little radio station, because it's been 31 years, and we want to keep going with this community radio. I invite you to stay tuned next for our beloved Jeff Harshbarger, one of the hardest working bassists here in town. And he's going to curate some great music for you. Trust me, Jazz Afternoon at 1, followed by Groovy Grant, Old G's Hangout. So there you go. And I want to say thank you all for listening today. Find us on Facebook, like us, and you can download our podcast at kkfi.org. Thanks so much for listening, and honey, I'm coming home.